Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. Today the government set out a little bit more detail about what returning to school will look like in September. Katie, what will it look like?
It won't look like it looked before coronavirus, I think is one way of putting it. So we know that the government has said it will be compulsory for all pupils to return to school in September. That means it's no longer going to be the choice of the parents whether or not they oblige. There'll be fines if they fail to do so. In terms of the guidelines set out today, which is explaining how they plan to keep children they're saying have to go to school safe, there are a few things. Firstly, the idea of bubble class sizes, something we knew about from earlier on, but in primary schools, you know, staying within that class, the idea that you limit infection because you have larger bubbles. I think on high schools, you can, in a way, bubble in an entire year. You can break it down, but it's not the same as primary schools, where clearly you can have a situation where a group of 30 stay with each other the whole time. High schools are more complicated because of the different subjects, so potentially bubbling whole years. But I think what's been quite interesting, what's been picked up in a few of the papers this morning in the Telegraph, is what happens or what can happen, which means schools are temporarily closed down again.
Mm.
And one thing here is if schools have up to two infections, you can have two cases, I think, within 2 weeks, and that could be deemed enough of a, you know, community transmission in the sense of school transmission, that you would temporarily go back to remote learning. So the idea being schools need to focus on making sure they can still do remote learning if they need to, even if school attendance is compulsory, because there will be times when the government is saying potentially if there's a local lockdown, etc., you're not going to school. I think the idea of two cases, it does show you how fragile this whole balance is. It's not a particularly high number, is it? I sound like I'm stating the obvious here, but I think if you were saying, oh, it has to reach this level, I mean, two cases in that time, I think you could see lots of schools opening and shutting if this doesn't get under control much more than it is now.
James, how practical are these guidelines? For example, the two if the infections in 2 weeks rule or the bubbling of the classrooms. Will children, especially younger students, will they actually do something like this?
Yeah, the crucial point is once you're inside your bubble, you do not have. You only have to try and observe social distancing. You don't have to observe social distancing. So the fact that children will inevitably play with each other, hug each other, play tag, all those things, I think means that, you know, this is a move away from the idea of, oh, there must be social distancing. It's like, no, you have your bubble, and within that bubble, there doesn't need to be social distancing. Mm-hmm. I think that's sensible. I mean, the key point is, as Katie identified, which is how certain can you be that schools are going to be... I think the government have basically decided we're going to get schools back in September, come what may. I think that is the right call, because on an economic level, because if people's children aren't at work, it creates massive childcare issues, especially with a virus that means that people are reluctant to ask their grandparents to look after their kids. And secondly, politically, because I think parents would have flipped their lids if they'd returned in September and been told, no, you've got to carry on homeschooling.
But you are enjoying homeschooling, James.
Thankfully, both my kids are currently in school. But I think the kind of the challenge is, how are things going to be this winter, and how frequently are you going to find schools being closed? Are we in a situation where year groups are regularly going to be sent home because, as Katie said, they've got to two cases and so all out for 2 weeks kind of thing? I mean, that is a political challenge. I think there is an interesting question here as well, which is, I think that the government, the first time around, the government took quite a polite approach to the teaching unions. I think if the teaching unions try and object to these plans for the September return, and the NEU are kind of flirting with doing that at the moment, then I think the government will take a much more, a much tougher line this time around.
And I think there's also an important development there, which is you heard Gavin Williamson set out the plans today. And I think even just before we get there, just in other ways that the school day is going to be different than perhaps it was previously, is outside of your bubble, you have to avoid contact, you know, regular cleaning of hands, no big group events like school assemblies, and separate groups on school buses, potentially different lunchtimes, so bubbles don't interact with other bubbles. But in terms of whether this is all possible, clearly it's quite complicated. But I think what in a way helps the government today is we have had a perhaps a change in position. Others might say it's a development of a position. But the new Shadow Education Secretary, Kate Green, no longer Rebecca Long Bailey, has said that she supports compulsory return of pupils. Now, that does come with some caveats, such as making it safe. So you can see how you could still get to a position where Labour would potentially say, you have failed XXX to the government, we don't think it's safe. But the spirit of getting all pupils back in September and not having it be a personal choice is something that is now supported by both the government and the opposition. And I think that does help in terms of what James is talking about, because in government there is a sense that they are going to have a massive fight on their hands getting all pupils back to schools in September. You see that parents are very mixed on whether or not they think it's something that should be going ahead.
It's interesting, the poll out today, and it's increased, but it's still only, as to Katie's point, it's only at 49%.
Yes, and I think that there has been a sense this whole way through that every time they say, oh, this year can go back, there's a bit of a lag in parents deciding to do it. So you have a few doing it, but lots of parents are holding back, seeing that nothing disastrous happens and then doing it. So, and I think with the compulsory system, they don't think that's going to fix it. And actually, a particular problem in government is a worry about disadvantaged areas, because they think the fine system actually will be more effective in middle class areas. If you don't think you can pay the fine anyway, it is less of an issue that you are going to be fined. So I think that that's one of the factors. So I think that if the unions, if you know, do take a strong stance on this, the government are already expected to have this fight. But the fact that you do have Labour now having changed position to a degree, because before, for all that Keir Starmer now does, you know, go at the Prime Minister for failing to get schools back, Labour's position was never black and white on this. Rebecca Long Bailey regularly seemed to side with the unions, or at least raise unions' concerns about schools returning. So I think we have a more broad support for the general aim now.
Meanwhile, in Brussels, James, the meetings between Michel Barnier and David Frost have been called off one day earlier. The headlines are billing this as big differences in the trade talks. Is it as significant as that? Have they flipped the table?
Well, as Michel Barnier would say, significant differences remain between the EU and the UK sides. I mean, it's quite clear from the statements issued by the two sides, but they are still quite a long way apart. The Barnier statement essentially is saying, look, we've moved by offering to shift from our very maximalist position on state aid, we now have to see the UK shifting too. Now, the good news is that these kind of in-person talks are going to carry on next week in London. I think that does offer some possibility. But there is another question here, which is, you know, the UK keeps saying that it wants to get this done, doesn't want this to drag on into the autumn. And this isn't just a desire to kind of move beyond Brexit. There's also an awareness on the UK side for these big multinational companies, banks in particular, they have contingency plans about what they will do in the event of there being no trade deal between the UK and the EU. They are going to trigger those before the end of the year. And so those will get triggered in the kind of in the late autumn. So if there is no deal in the late autumn, those contingency plans get triggered. And then the value of getting a deal reduces quite substantially, because lots of businesses have already acted as if there is no trade agreement in place and taken the necessary steps. So, I mean, the EU is essentially saying, if you want a quick deal, you've got to move more towards our position. The UK is maintaining its kind of its view of, you know, no, we're not. I personally think there are compromises. There are ways that you can bridge the gap between the two sides. The UK's reddest of red lines is about the role of the European Court of Justice. I think there are ways to get around that problem. But I think that you will need to see a political choice made on both sides to work a way round that.
And in Scotland, Katie, Nicola Sturgeon has announced the easing of the Scottish lockdown. Can you tell us what she said? And is it as far as the English easing?
Yeah, so it's different to the easing in England in a few ways. So there is a relaxation, but there are some changes. So the 2 metre rule is being replaced in certain settings. So you are effectively heading to a 1 metre plus arrangement. It's just that I don't think the Scottish government would use the same language as Westminster. And obviously there are slight nuances, but the idea that it is less than 2 metres in some places, particularly for businesses, is the case. But I think there are differences is that Nicola Sturgeon said the use of face coverings will be mandatory in shops in Scotland, which is something that we don't have here. Mm. It's mandatory on public transport, but not in shops. And she's also said that children under the age of 12 will no longer need to maintain physical distancing from other households while outdoors, which isn't something we have here, though. I think anyone who is a parent, and I'm not speaking personally but more from stories from certain colleagues, it's very hard to maintain that anyway. So I'm not sure children will listen to that and suddenly think they can do things. They're probably doing it anyway, but it might relax the parents. So I think there are a few things like that. One thing that we were hearing about was this potential quarantine for the English going across the border into Scotland. There's no mention that this is going ahead. I still think there are some concerns because it has been put into the public sphere, but that's not something that's included in this. So I think broadly speaking, there are similarities of what's happening in England, but there are enough differences that if you were to be in both places, you would have to change your behaviour. And you're already hearing a little bit of kickback from certain groups looking after retail industry, grocers, about this mandatory face mask and whether it's going to make it harder for people to do their job, harder to get business going again. But it is just constantly that balance of red tape and risk.
It's as fascinating as debate about face masks, which is there are two ways of looking at it. One is, do face masks make people feel more confident about going out and into shops? Are people more, essentially, are people more likely to go back to their local high street because they think that the face masks are going to protect them? Or do the face masks have a kind of chilling effect? They basically remind people that things are still weird and so deter people from going out. I mean, this is an absolutely fascinating question. I think it is interesting how in London, before, at the height of lockdown, people were wearing face masks in public transport. And then that began to wear off until face masks became compulsory and now people are. But even now, public transport in London is still very empty compared to
how it was. Two very busy buses this morning. Did you? One I wasn't allowed to go on because it was maximum of 20. And the second one I did get on, but it was pretty full. All face masks. So it does feel in certain places it's picking up slightly.
So I think this is the big question. I think one of the big dilemmas for the government, you're already hearing about job losses at upper crust, for example, a sandwich shop that you find in stations and things like that. And one of the big questions coming now is that, that if people carry on working from home, all of those jobs in industries that essentially serve office workers are going to end up going. And that is really going to push unemployment up because, a lot of hospitality and retail in this country is about, helping out, the worker bees Monday to Friday who are going into the office, who don't bring their lunch in, go to the sandwich shop, all those things, right? And until people start coming back into city centres, those jobs are going to be highly at risk.
And I think Katie is single-handedly propping up the local economy around Westminster. So, I mean, hopefully this weekend brings some change.
I don't think you're shaming me for having two burritos for my lunch today.
A morally virtuous thing to be doing. So I guess we'll see what this weekend brings as well when there is Independence Day, as it's been dubbed. Thanks to Katie and James, and do join us again tomorrow.
Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.